Energikommisjonen har gitt marsjordre. De ønsker mer av alt, raskere. I Europower stiller vi spørsmålet, hvordan bygge mer kraft raskere, uten dødsfall? Kan IT spille en rolle her? Se merkraftraskere.no og ta gjerne kontakt dersom dere har en løsning som kan redde liv.
Welcome to this episode of Europower Investor Podcast. Dear audience and dear listeners, please welcome Mr. Jason Zheng, CEO and founder of Carrion Capital and SellerateX, Mr. Jan Fredrik Stados, Corporate Strategy Manager in Equinor, Paul Frisvold, member of the Executive Board in the Green Party and also former EU Climate Pact Ambassador, Mr. Gunnar Hovland, CEO in Aneo, and Mr. Torbjørn Gjever Eriksen, Director Industry and Policy and Communication in Offshore Norway. Welcome. And now you have to clap. Mrs. Kari Elisabeth Kaski unfortunately had to cancel her participation here today, but luckily we asked Paul Frisvold and he stepped in on very short notice, so, and in that way we secured no women on stage. That was a joke. To know where you're going, you have to know where you come from. You agree? So now we are going to debate, are we dependent on the oil industry in order to finance the energy transition? To know where you're going, you know, you have to know where you come from. And as you can see, I'm not from Oslo, you see? You all see that I'm from Sarpsborg. Which is a Norwegian city. A short story about where we come from. Does anyone know Spring Energy? Raise a hand. One, two, and three, four. Spring Energy was financed by High Tech Vision. It was an oil and gas company. And I think High Tech Vision made or earned approximately 4 billion NOK during 4 years on this journey. The High Tech Vision sold Spring Energy to Tullow Oil. And then Tullow Oil decided to close down the Norway office. Can you raise your hand how many of you got fired? Yes, one person got fired because Tullow Oil did not want to be located in Norway any longer. It's a nice story, isn't it? Then the team in Tullow Oil asked someone to help them. Who they can? Some of you raise your hand if you help them. Yeah. So, Mr. Jason Zheng, what happened when this team was fired? This oil team in the oil company was fired.
Sure. We were looking at broadly all the developed markets, oil and gas industries outside of the US, and we identified Norway as a place that we wanted to be. So we looked at all the different teams that were available who were looking to do interesting things within our strategy, and identified the Spring Energy team and from Tullow as being one of the best teams in Norway, and we subsequently backed them with a few hundred million dollars to build a company.
So you got an email and then you said, yes, a few hundred million dollars?
Yes.
Will you do the same with, or can you do the same with Norwegian high-skilled teams when it comes to renewables?
Yeah, absolutely. So our strategy is to find a talented team who's got domain expertise in a particular area and set the objectives jointly and enable that team to meet its potential through providing all the financial capital that's required to do that and other support. So it's a strategy that we have deployed historically in oil and gas and continue to do today.
Do you think that we are dependent on the oil and gas in order to finance the transition? In your speak earlier today, you mentioned the skill set from the oil and gas.
Mm. Okay, there's many different facets to that question. So yes, in terms of skill set, there are key energy transition verticals which can borrow from an oil and gas skill set. I think Equinor talked about offshore wind. We definitely see that in the case of hydrogen, petrochemicals, and so on. So there are sectors where there is as an adjacency, and oil and gas skill set is the best amongst many other skill sets, but usually the best to be able to do that, particularly in things like where there's a subsurface issue, subsurface risk, or those sorts of things. In terms of financing, there is a lot of capital coming into energy transition globally. I think of all the sectors which struggled to raise, everybody struggled to raise capital broadly in the last couple of years, given where interest rates are, IPO markets are being more or less closed. But the one sector that has generated a lot of interest from institutional investors is climate. And so I think there is an increasingly amount of capital that's out there, which is willing to come into this sector as well. Specifically, Norway, obviously, there's a huge oil and gas industry here, generates a lot of tax revenue. If governments want to, if the government wants to deploy that within energy transition, as it should, that mechanism, I think, is already there. But I do think there is a lot of capital, and that will only increase over time. And we've seen with our investors, it more and more capital gets allocated to this strategy.
Mr. Torbjørn Eriksen, the message from your organization, Offshore Norway, has during the last 10 years been the world needs more energy, and Norwegian oil and gas production is the cleanest production of oil and gas in the world. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's correct as well.
Yeah. with the energy crisis now, the whole world screams your message.
Yes.
And then you change your name. Yeah. The organization.
Yeah, because we change name every 10 years or so, reflecting the changes in the industry. Back in 2012, we changed our name from the oil producers to Norwegian Oil and Gas, acknowledging the role of Norwegian gas. And then, of course, we had to change name again because we have a lot of members from offshore wind, carbon capture, working with hydrogen. We had to change name from Norwegian Oil and Gas to Offshore Norway to reflect that underlying industrial change.
As a nation, we profit on the energy crisis, partly due to the war. What kind of responsibility do we have as a nation to use some of this money to accelerate the renewable transition?
Yes, well, the industry, the role of the industry is to provide the energy, which we have done the last 2 years. Equinor and other of our member companies, they have increased their gas export to Europe with about 10%. Our other role, providing reliable energy for the continent, our other role is to provide the tax revenue. And the government take on the Norwegian continental shelf is between 80 and 90%. This year, we will contribute 800 million Norwegian kroner to the state budget. How the politicians choose to use that money, well, that's a political question that we have to leave to the politicians. Our role as an industry is to provide the energy for the...
What do you think, as a person?
As a private person? Yeah. Oh, I'm a board member of the Free Ukraine organization, so I think... By that, I've said what I mean as a person. No. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Jan Fredrik Stadas, Equinor. Equinor is an oil and gas company. No, sorry.
Broad energy company.
I wrote, sorry. Broad energy company. Why don't you just do like Dong Energy, just exit oil and gas and put all your skilled personnel into the future?
No, I think obviously, man, we could do that. I don't think it's a wise thing to do, because I think the combination of both creating value through the oil and gas, which is actually needed in the energy transition, as well as developing renewables, which is also needed in the energy transition. But I think it's extremely important that this energy system is now.
But when I married,
in change,
when
yeah.
I married,
yeah.
I got a good advice not to send text messages to, or when I met my wife, not to send text messages to my ex. Why do you use so much energy on
That's a good analogy.
So
that's hard to answer.
I don't want to comment your personal life. So what is wise and not and wise, but no, but seriously, I think the combination of the two makes us much stronger and kind of increase the success, the kind of the rate of success in order to make the transition happen. We need the capital. We need the people. But you also need the flexibility. I mean, what's the Dong has been kind of very successful for a while. Now it's kind of shrunk and have some issues. I think having this hybrid solution of doing both makes you more robust. It is more resilient to the change. But it also makes you the ability to act when you see the opportunities. Because if you are kind of vulnerable, you are not able to execute at scale, at speed, when you see that comes. So being alone is you can sometimes move faster, but it's also much dangerous. So I think it's good to be together with both our colleagues with the kind of with capital, but also the outreach globally, because we can actually invest in renewables in many places of the world, partly because we have the competence and the outreach and also the name actually Equinor. That we can use in our relations to governments and others.
Do you think that the world is dependent on the oil and gas industry in order to finance the energy transition?
Not necessarily to finance, but probably it's part of to execute on it in a good way. And I think also it's important that a lot of this transition is need risk capital. It's not risk free. So especially in when the kind of the world moves up and down and the interest rates goes up and so on, it's important to have risk capital at hand in order to handle that. And that's something that the oil and gas industry can get hold of.
So it's like marrying. It's not risk-free. during the pandemic, the Norwegian government supported the oil and gas industry with approximately 30 billion NOK. You earn 30 billion NOK in a tax package. And the activity in the oil and gas industry is now all-time high. Gunnar Hovland, do you think it was value for money?
You have to ask Gunnar on that one, I think. But I think that it shows that when you really, you did in 2020 then, subsidized the investments there, you got increased activity quite substantial. So you see that in the oil and gas industry, activities increased by 36 billion afterwards now, comparing 2019 numbers with 2023 numbers in SSB. And at the same time, you can see at the renewables in Norway, you've seen that the peak that we had in 2019, 2020, also for Norway, was peaking at about 20 billion, and now it's down to 6.6 billion. So the tax that was implemented to the renewables and all these issues mentioned before here has in a way reduced the investments in renewables in Norway quite dramatically and increased the oil investments quite dramatically.
Yes, the tax, the temporary tax measures, the regime that we got in 2020 was very prudent and it has been very profitable for the Norwegian society. Let me give you one number. With all the around 30 plans for development that was contributed under the tax regime, all those projects, they will give the state revenues in the vicinity of 750 billion Norwegian crowns. So we're not a subsidized industry. We contribute to Norwegian society and in some very crucial years for the European continent as well. We managed to increase the gas export to our allies in Europe. As many times before, we have very prudent energy politicians in Norway, thinking long term and ensuring the community all the benefits.
Paul Frisvold, you had a comment? Or?
I have so many comments, Christian. I'm just dying to get the floor here. Yeah. But where do you want me to start?
You can hide.
So let me say that, you know, what I found the most inspiring this morning was from High Tech Vision, who said that they provide capital and impatience, right? So I'm the policy guy. We're in for policy and impatience because it is the regulatory environment that's going to make a difference here. And to all of you who went to business school and wrote an honest master thesis, you learned that the client is always right, right? So what is the client of the oil and gas sector in Norway? Well, it is true that, thank God, we were able to step up the production and provide 10% more gas exports to Europe during a very critical time, which we are still in. Whether or not that was a huge effort, it was a profitable effort indeed, because you made some money that was, you know, we had never ever dreamed of making. But when I talk about the customer, I think that that industry needs to look at what is actually being planned for. Because oil and gas is a very long, it takes time, right? Before you, by the time you search, you start producing and selling. And we see that our customer, who is always right, has actually a very dedicated, detailed plan and strategy, which is to get out of gas. Because you might say that gas means security, and indeed it did. So before and soon after 24th of February 2022, but today in Europe, it is renewables that means energy security. And Europe has some very ambitious goals, you know. This morning there was an event at Cicero talking about what are the goals of the European Union in 2040. Will it be 85? Will it be 90? Will it be 95? I mean, whatever three targets, if those are adopted, the amount of demand of gas from Norway is going to be considerably reduced. Considerably. And let me finish by this. As I see, I need to hand back the floor to my colleagues here. But I work for the environmental movement in my daytime, and we just had a hearing in the European Parliament where we presented the report called EU and Norwegian Gas, How Much for How Long? And in that report, quite interestingly, we actually used the figures, not by the environmental movement, but by the IEA, by the DNV, by Ørsta, who is the hero of the oil and gas industry. And they actually came, all of those figures had something in common, that by 2030, by 2040, and up to 2050, the amount of consumption of natural gas, or fossil gas, as we say, will diminish by more than 90%. So I hope that Norwegian offshore energy will listen to their customer.
Before we move on.
Yeah, but sure. Frisol from the Green Party, he's somewhat correct and somewhat wrong. When it comes to listening to the customers, the Norwegian oil and gas industry does that. Just a couple of months ago, Equinor signed an agreement to deliver gas to Germany with long-term 2040 or something. And all the politicians from the European Union, they have been at traffic to have photo opportunities on Troll and the Norwegian continental shelf. So I think medium term, of course, we will sell natural gas. But Frisvold is right about long term, if the European Union tighten the climate policy, the Norwegian industry has to change. Then we have to accelerate carbon capture and storage in order to deliver hydrogen in 2040s or something. So that we may be agreeing.
We have to move on. Mr. Gunnar Hovland, Aneo is financed by Hi-Tech Vision, and Hi-Tech Vision came from the oil. So everything comes from the oil, if not from the coal, because you worked in Tine before, didn't you?
Yep,
yeah. The tax package. 30 billion NOK. What could we have done if we had given this tax package to the renewable industry?
Well, I'm planning for giving quite much also to the offshore wind industry, so you know there's tax coming in there, and the ocean is going on these days. But I think for onshore wind, where we are positioned, you don't need the tax packages. It's profitable enough, and you get, as you were into it, the capital markets, supply us with the money we need to do what we need to do. I think the main issue there is
as for Norway at least, to do the things that we discussed previously today, that there are these, if you look into how many concessions been given for the past 3 years for onshore wind in Norway, the number is almost zero. And these figures that I mentioned, that back in 2019 we invested 20 billion, now it's 6.6 billion, last year. And that is due to the concession system that we have, the predictability that's been discussed.
So what do you think about the predictability in Norway?
Well, I think our investors think that what happened last year was a heavy blow to the feet, in a way, because you changed the regime backwards. And in a way, to buy a new site, and you then after you bought it, you got a tax payment for things happening 5 years ago. That's quite heavy to explain to American investors.
I think that most of you think that the predictability is bad here in Norway. Why are you here, Mr. Jason Cheng, if it's so bad? Did you take the wrong plane?
I think, as I mentioned, we invest globally. And so when we look at Europe, Norway included, that the discussion around energy transition has bipartisan support. It has also had the experience of energy transition for quite a long time. So the thinking, the policy design always can be optimized, but it's much more advanced than many other places in the world. So that, I think, is an overall benefit from where we stand. There are a lot of other countries that we go to where there is less policy stability overall, as well as policy being much more nascent. And so, particularly in Asia, while most of the large economies have committed to net zero carbon, a lot of the policy design and the follow-through is still yet to be done, whereas it already exists here for some time. And so there is a benefit in learning from the experiences here and bringing that back to other countries.
Gunnar Hovland, Mr. Tord Lien reports to you, former energy minister. Right. And during the pandemic, he worked in NHO. And he was lobbying in order to get this tax package in place. Do you if we meet a new pandemic, do you think he will manage to do the same for renewables? Is that why you hired him?
Well, he was hired before me. But I think that what we have discussed at our place is that it's not a tax package which is needed for the renewables in Norway. It's more to have these concessions and to have the profitable projects up running. So we're not into discussing tax packages to make things going forward. It's more the system around us so that we can advance and not have a standstill as we have now for the past 3 years.
Jan Fredrik Stadas, I have a lot of friends in the oil industry, and they, since I work in a renewable magazine, they ask me, or they are very disappointed because Equinor are always invited to speak like this about renewables, but it's an oil and gas company, they say, your colleagues. Let's turn a little bit around on the question. Are we dependent on investing a small percentage in renewable energy in order to greenwash the investments in oil and gas?
No, I think I addressed this in my lecture, how much we're actually investing. So we are going to invest almost up to 50% of the capital in 2030 in renewables and low carbon. So we do this for a business. We want to do this in order to develop the company, because this is what the market needs. I mean, it needs electricity. No doubt about it, right? So that's why you invest. We think it's good for business. We think it's good for climate. We think actually it's good for the company as well, giving opportunities for the employees, and it is good for Norway. So this is a combination. So we don't do this for greenwashing. Obviously, then it's
a little bit.
No, not as far as I see it. I'm working in Equinor and Hydro for 30 years. And it's been super rewarding every day to come into this company to do both. And I hadn't done it for the greenwashing.
We are soon going in for a landing. But before that, Paul Frisvold, with the EU perspective, how dependent are EU on Norwegian gas?
Okay, so... That's the $48,000 question, no? Exactly. Today, the Norwegian export of natural gas has gone from about 23% to 29%, 30%. So indeed. But what we see, it is an unprecedented capacity of ability to change and to adapt. Because the EU member states adopted already in, when was it, in November, December 2022, that they would reduce gas consumption by 15% in 6 months. In 6 months, they reduce it by 22%. So I think what we're seeing ahead of us is a very different EU than before, much more capable of adjusting to new environment, much more higher ability to adapt. We saw that under the pandemic. The Commission actually went to pharmaceutical companies to negotiate and to make deals. Now they do the same thing in armament, on energy, and they set new criteria. This whole concept of having a common platform for negotiating gas contracts is, you know, we couldn't even dream of it before the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So yes, I think we see a very potent, strong, despite Brexit or other rumors, we see a much more consolidated, ambitious EU that is actually capable of introducing vast amount of reforms. We've had the Fit for 55, we had the Repower EU addition to that, which lays the foundation for these huge cuts. So I think you see a range of policy initiatives that will actually reduced dramatically. I mentioned the 2040 targets of 90%, but you can also look at legislation concerning the transport sector or the heating sector, where the fossil boilers will no longer be allowed for after 2050. I mean, that's one third of the Norwegian market of exporting gas. So I think there's a fundamental change, and I think it's going to be fast. And I think, therefore, I hope that Aker and Torbjørn's member would put as much money into lawyers that will lobby for the transition and your guys than they have done for the oil sector.
Okay. Before I started in Europower, I built a software company in the oil and gas industry. We sold the company and we used some of the money in order to finance one third of Europower. So Norway's leading new service for renewable energy is financed one third with money from the oil and gas. I think that might be my conclusion. And I wrote the conclusion before I heard you. Thank you very much for your participation. Jan Fredrik Stadås, Gunnar Hovland, Torbjørn Gjever Eriksen, Paul Trisvold, and Jason Cheng. Thank you. My name is Skjul Kristian Aamodt.